we're all grieving over the tragedy that occurred in Radcliffe, Kentucky, where a school bus containing many, many teenagers and a few adults, of course, was hit by a man in a pickup truck whose blood alcohol level was 2.5 times the legal limit. As I understand it, he was going down the wrong way of a freeway and hit the bus head on. The bus broke into flames. They had just filled the tank with gasoline, and the kids couldn't get out, and 27 of them died. Yeah. The whole country is talking about this. This is not new news, but
a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, being Memorial Day, a day when many people in North America think the best way to spend their time is to get dead drunk, it seems appropriate to talk about the problem of drunk drivers and to mourn for the loss of these precious kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that that little town of Radcliffe only has 18,000 people in it, and only one high school serves the city. So you can imagine what's going on in that community and what will continue to go on there for years.
This broadcast is being heard in Radcliffe, Kentucky. We have a number of people who've written to us over the years and have indicated that they've enjoyed these programs, and I know that our staff, shortly after that fateful 14th of May, were on the phone talking with our friends in that community.
In fact, we have 75 people on our mailing list from that community, and we were able to contact 40 of them. We were not able to reach the other 35. There's just chaos there, as you can imagine. We were also unable to reach the pastor of the church, the Assemblies of God Church in Radcliffe. We did talk to a member of the church, Opal Clater, and we're trying to stay in touch on that issue. It's just incredible, Mike. The coroner indicated that not one of those victims would have died from the crash. They could not get out of the back of the bus. The back door would not open, as I understand it, and they were burned or suffocated to death. You know, Mike, this reminds me so much of the bus crash that occurred in Yuba City, California, I guess in the late 50s, early 60s. I can't remember the timing. I do remember that I was asked to come there and speak not too long after that crash. As I remember, there was a high school band that was being transported in a bus which went off a freeway ramp and landed upside down and suffocated some 20, 22, 23 kids. And I arrived in that city and found people still in a state of shock.
Yes.
All of those kids were in the same funeral home, or most of them were, and they said that it was like the whole senior class was asleep to walk in there. A revival broke out in that community, however, and people found the Lord at the funeral, and there's been a lasting impact. They will never forget it, and of course the people in Radcliffe, Kentucky will never forget it either. The incredible tragedy is that this is not an isolated situation. It is happening much more quietly in towns and cities and on freeways and on roads across this country. People are being slaughtered because of alcohol. I don't understand why our legislatures will not address this problem and do something about it. It could be stopped.
Well, that takes us back to the reason why we're preempting the originally scheduled broadcast for today. We want to go back to a program that we aired with a woman who is very much involved with Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Mm. That was 1985 when we did that program, Mike, and we would have re-aired it anyway. It's just appropriate on Memorial Day, a day when others will die. Isn't that unbelievable? Today, this day, others will die because somebody is irresponsible with alcohol. It is appropriate on this holiday to talk to someone who has worked in an organization that is attempting to call attention to the problem of drunk driving. Why don't we get on with that interview, Mike?
Perhaps airing this broadcast today will save a life somewhere.
Our guest today is Barbara Bloomberg, whom I met in my office just a few minutes ago. And Barbara, I already feel that I have a great deal in common with you. You represent the organization called Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, or MAD. That organization is not real old. How long has it been around?
It's approximately 5 years old. Actually, it was 5 years in May when Candy Leitner founded the organization.
And it was originated out of tragedy in her life, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me
yes.
about it.
Candy lost her 13-year-old twin daughter in May 1980. And she very quickly learned that the drunk driver who caused the death of her daughter had been released on bail just that morning before he hit and killed her. And then she found out that he had been a four-time repeat offender. And began questioning a system that sanctioned this behavior and allowed this kind of criminal behavior to continue.
You got involved in much the same way, didn't you, Barbara?
Mm-hmm. My 16-year-old son, Seth, was killed. He was killed in September of 1980.
Right here near us on a Southern
mm-hmm.
California freeway.
Mm-hmm. Not too far from here. And it has been a tragedy in our lives, a crisis that I would not wish on my worst enemy.
What is that experience like? What did you experience, if you don't mind telling us, when you got that phone call? Every parent dreads it. Every parent fears it, especially in the night hours. What was it like for you?
I guess I can articulate it best by saying it's like being amputated without anesthesia. To hear that a child that you loved and you raised as part of your soul, as part of your whole being, has been obliterated and killed in the most horrible, violent way. And Seth and his friend Dave, by the way, there were two boys that were killed, were killed in a grotesque way. They were hit from the rear end. They were parked alongside the freeway. They had been waiting for help. And this 20-year-old crashed into them and the car exploded. And both boys were burned to death. So I think that many things happen to you and you go into a state of shock. The grief very quickly turns to rage. And I think that the rage is three times greater than I think a death caused by a natural disease or a death of any other kind.
Because it's so senseless. It's so meaningless and so unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. A total waste. And it's the only crime today that we can stop, we can prevent.
Why in the world have the state legislatures been so reluctant to deal with this issue?
I think that before MAD, it's never caught their attention. I think Candy Leitner caught their attention. I think all of us forming together, organizing the grassroots level, the mothers that started this, caught their attention. We caught the sympathy of the media. We were the media darlings 5 years ago, 4 years ago. We still are in many ways. We started out as a handful of grieving, angry mothers, but now we're close to a million strong in 47 states.
You know, when you consider approximately 50,000 young men died in Vietnam, and that stands as one of the greatest tragedies in the history of our country, and yet we lose 50,000 on the highways every year, I guess close to half of those for reasons related to alcohol,
mm-hmm.
or is the figure greater than that?
It's about 26,000 each year.
Yeah.
Alcohol related.
And yet it just goes on like it's expected.
Mm-hmm.
And it hits all around us. I was telling you when you were in my office that just 3 weeks ago, Shirley and I have very good friends that live in Stockton, California. And they have a 15-year-old son who was on his way someplace with a girlfriend who's also 15, and her older sister, 17, who was driving. And they had been at their house and had pictures taken, and it had a barbecue, and they laughed, and they got in the car and drove off, and drove about a mile or two from the house, and were hit head-on by a man whose alcoholic content in his blood was three times the legal limit. And the two girls were killed, and the boy was just broken. Broken pelvis, broken arm, broken leg. I don't know all of his injuries. And the awesome tragedy of it is related to how, as I said before, how unnecessary
mm-hmm.
it is and why we can't get our legislature to deal with it, either here in California or elsewhere. Now, there has been some progress made. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there has been. Tremendous progress. And we have made waves in many state capitals across the country, and now Candy is worldwide. I mean, we have chapters that are starting in Canada, and I understand England and New Zealand and Australia from what I've heard. But there's definitely a need for more. We must educate everyone about this issue, and it's a very complex issue. And not everyone looks upon this behavior as criminal, and that's the crux of the whole matter. When you ask me about why the legislators have been reluctant to take stands, it's not looked upon as criminal behavior. We're talking about our husbands, our fathers, our brothers, our neighbors, our aunts and uncles that had a drink too many. They didn't mean to go out and kill someone or maim someone. And this is how the judges look upon it. This is how the enforcement agencies look upon it. This is the attitude that we have got to change. We can make all the laws in the world. We can make very tough laws, and we've got tough laws on the books. But it's the enforcement that's got to go into that. And with enforcement goes education.
Now, MAD is not just a lobby group. In fact, I think you kind of shy away from that a little bit. You consider your primary objective to be victim advocacy. What does that mean?
Absolutely. Well, I believe that to be a victim or a survivor of a drunk driving tragedy, particularly, you really have nowhere to turn. It's just an overwhelming sense of loss and grief. You know, we're assaulted at three levels. We're assaulted at the loss. We're assaulted at having to deal with the criminal courts, the criminal injustice system, I like to call it. And then on the third level, we're abandoned by society, which is a real interesting phenomenon to people who have been struck by tragedy.
Abandoned in what sense?
Abandoned in that shortly after the funeral and everyone comes for a few weeks and they bring cakes and they sit down and they try to give you some kind of comfort, they leave. And that silence is so deafening and it is so difficult to bear because after that, people don't know what to say. They felt that they have said what they needed to say, and they've offered the comfort.
Come
and after
on,
that,
Barbara,
they don't know what to say.
Get back to reality. Enough of this grieving stuff. Let's get your life together. How long are you going to go on crying? You can't cry forever. Get it together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the attitude.
Aren't you over that yet?
Mm.
Get back into the swing of things. Come on out, and we'll play tennis. Let's go out to lunch. And I think what I tell people now is when they call me and say, what can I do? A friend of mine just lost their child. A friend of mine just lost their husband. I said, please do not leave them alone. They want you to pick up the phone occasionally and say, I'm thinking about you. I care about you. I love you. If there's anything at all you need, can I help you? And expect a no or say, you know, expect a no, thank you. And then say, okay, remember I'm here, and hang up. Or send them a note, something written, a caring, beautiful little note once every few months or once every few weeks, just to let them know that you're still thinking about
them. At least through the first year.
At least.
I find the first year, all of the landmarks during that first year, you know, Christmas, the birthday, the July 4th, all the things that you used to do on those holidays, each one of those brings a new kind of pain.
Definitely.
If you could write your own legislation and make it any way you wanted, how would it look? What would you do to the person who, for the third time, staggers out of a bar and gets in a car, and the other two times he's been arrested but hasn't killed anybody, this time he runs over somebody? Well, what would you do to him? Would he spend the rest of his life in jail?
No. The reality says no, he would never spend the rest of his life in jail. I would like to see a very severe sentence. I would like to see more... There's really no justice here.
Yeah.
I could say, yes, we are living a life sentence. The families, the parents, the loved ones are going to live a life sentence of pain from this. And there's never going to be enough justice served upon this criminal. And if you're asking me personally, yes, I would like to see a much more severe, I'd like to see vehicular murder go down on the books as the law of the land. If you drink and drive, you will go to prison, and you will spend 15 years to life if you murder someone or if you kill someone or maim someone.
All right, let's relate this now to the rest of us. I happen to be a teetotaler, and that's a commitment that is a lifelong thing with me. But what can I do and people like me do who are not found in bars and don't tend to frequent places where people are doing a lot of drinking? What can we do to reduce the problem of driving and drinking that's occurring around us?
Oh, my goodness. If I'm at a party, if I'm socializing with people, and I would say to them, I think that perhaps you've had a little bit too much to drink, and that car is a dangerous weapon. May I drive you home? May I pay for a cab? Can I call a cab for you? People have got to be less afraid to take a stand about what they're feeling or thinking or doing about their lives or the lives of the ones, their loved ones. And I definitely feel that drinking and driving is the kind of behavior that we will not accept, we will not tolerate. And if everyone would stand up and say, I'm not going to tolerate it anymore, and if it means just talking to your husband or talking to your neighbor, discussing it with them in a very sensitive manner, not in a confrontation, or going down to see your local assembly person or your local legislator and looking them in the eye and saying, I want this stopped. This carnage has got to stop. We want to prevent these tragedies in our community. Ask them, what are they doing about it? Tell them to stop driving after they've had a few too many or a few drinks at a party. It's communication.
Perhaps our listeners know, Barbara, that drinking and driving is the number one cause of death among teenagers today.
Well, if they don't know it, they should know it. And it's probably the single most, the greatest tragedy today that I know that I was absolutely staggered when I learned that statistic. I learned very recently that 154 teenagers are killed each week, 22 a day are killed in alcohol-related crashes because they are drinking themselves or they are partying and getting into cars with young people that are drinking. And I cannot tell you that personally for me, I am getting great satisfaction out of being able to work with our young people. And what we need to do is make drinking and driving socially unacceptable to our teenagers, that it is uncool to drink and drive. It is uncool for a young girl to get into a car with that macho, sexy 16-year-old guy who just got his license after he's been had a six-pack at a party.
You give her the courage to say, I'm not going to do that.
Give her the courage. Also, I have to emphasize that if the parents would only open up this topic with their teenagers at a safe time, once again, it should never be a confrontation. It should never be a judgmental conversation. It should just be, let's say on a Monday or Tuesday night at dinner time, if a parent would say in a very sensitive manner to their teenage child, you know, that they would appreciate it if they're partying, if they're at a party, and if they're ever in a kind of a vulnerable situation, and they question their behavior, the behavior of their friends, to please call them, whether it's 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, Barbara, you've quoted some statistics that are very alarming. Let's conclude with this one, that only one in every 2,000 drunk drivers will ever be arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol. Why is that? In conclusion here, tell us why that is.
I believe it's very simple. They just do not have enough manpower to arrest or detect anyone who's driving under the influence. And another reason is that there are many functioning alcoholics who don't really function until they reach a 2.0 or a 2.5 or a 3.0. And they, you know, they're just like you and I mean, we know we're perfectly sober. That's when they first wake up. So that there are people who are driving under the influence at this intoxication limit who are driving very well and just, I've heard many alcoholics say that they've had a blackout. They don't know how they got home. But they learn to function. They learn to manipulate that automobile. And then again, there are simply the impaired drivers with a very low blood alcohol level who weave all over the highways, and they're the ones that the law enforcement can detect. They see them, and some of them don't bother to put their lights on. Some of them are just on the brakes all the time, so that they're very visible methods that they can detect them.
Give us the bottom line. What do you want people to do in response to this program? Let's suppose we're talking to people who have not been sensitized to this need. Maybe their own children, their own adolescents are out there on weekends in cars, and they're very concerned. What do they do? Do they contact MAD? Do they go to their own representatives in state government? Do they go to the federal government? Do they write the president? What do they do?
All of those. I think the most important thing is that they begin to communicate about this issue, that this is an issue that can affect them. And they can speak out. If they see a commercial on television that causes them to become outraged, call that television station. Write letters to the editor. Contact your local MAD chapter. Contact your local assembly person or congressman. Speak out. The more complacent we are, the more it's going to continue. And this is, as I said before, probably the most senseless crimes that we have in this country today, but the one that can be prevented if each one of us takes a stand.
Would Seth be proud of you for what you're doing?
Yes, he would be. And he would probably be one of the first teenagers or young adults to step forward to get involved. And I would encourage any teenager that's listening today to get involved as well. Not just the parents and not just the adults, but it's the young people. And Seth would have been in the forefront. So, thank you.
Barbara, we've tried for almost a year to arrange this interview and this meeting. I'm delighted that you could come by. You're a very busy lady. You're in demand all over Southern California, aren't you?
Well, not quite all over Southern California, but yes, I do manage to stay busy.
Well, that speaks of the need, and you've spoken of it very well, and we're delighted to have you here as our guest.
Well, thank you very much. This was a pleasure for me.
Well, what we've been sharing with you on this Memorial Day holiday is a broadcast that originally was heard on the Focus on the Family Network in 1985. And we thank Barbara Bloomberg for coming by and talking with us about Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And, Doctor, I hope the re-airing of this broadcast today will influence those in positions of leadership to put through legislation that will address this horrendous issue of alcohol abuse.
Yeah, sometimes a tragedy like this bus crash that we were talking about at the top of the program is necessary to wake people up and to bring about the changes that are really required.
And this program has been provided by Focus on the Family. Your host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back tomorrow as we again turn our hearts toward home.